Sign up to The Economist for in-depth curated expert analysis of world events and topics ranging from business and culture to science and technology. You'll get the weekly digital edition, online-only articles, curated newsletters on politics, the markets, science, culture, and China, and full access to The Economist Podcast Plus. The Economist is independent journalism for independent thinking. Go to economist.com and get your first month free.
Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking, I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Hi, this is Nevedita Kaur, the host of the New Books Network Anthropology Channel, and today we are joined by author Dr. Bruce O'Neill to talk about his latest book, The Space of Boredom, Homelessness in the Slowing Global Order. Great to have you with us here today. Dr. O'Neill, how are you?
It's great to be here. Please call me Bruce.
Oh, yeah. Okay, wonderful. So why don't we get started by telling us a little bit about yourself and how you became interested in this field and as a career as a social anthropologist.
Absolutely. You know, I have a longstanding interest in the question of homelessness that kind of dates back to my childhood growing up in St. Louis. It's been a topic that's always been interesting to me ever since I was young. And when I went off to college, I majored in sociology and in philosophy. I was really interested in thinking about homelessness in cities. And it's a theme that's kind of carried me throughout my trajectory. I did my master's then in urban geography, and again was very much interested during that coursework about thinking about urban inequality and the various ways it takes shape. And originally, you know, I had intended to go back into sociology, but while, you know, doing my master's and applying to graduate programs, I had an instructor who kind of pulled me aside and, you know, said, look, the way you're interested in asking and answering questions, I really think American anthropology is better suited for you.
Yeah.
And so I segued into anthropology and took my first anthropology seminar as a PhD student.
And what about your motivation specifically for writing a book on homelessness and globalization?
Yeah. You know, again, homelessness is this longstanding interest of mine. And so as I moved from, you know, sociology to geography and to anthropology, I was invited to think about urban inequality and homelessness in different ways. And, you know, globalization, it's a major topic in anthropology, and it's hard to think about. It's hard to think about anything anthropologically without thinking about globalization and the global order. So it seemed like a very intuitive subject to enter into.
Yeah, definitely. And then in particular, why was the focus on Romania?
Yeah. And again, this is the kind of peculiarity I felt in terms of segueing into anthropology. So, you know, I went and I pulled out some PhD. I'll give you the long story.
Yeah.
Application to graduate courses. And, you know, what's peculiar about the anthropology application is that there's a box that asks you, where in the world do you want to study?
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't a question that I had necessarily thought of before. And so, you know, with all the time allotted in an application cycle, I started, you know, thinking about where in the world I was interested in, having grown up in the 1980s and having caught the tail end of the Cold War, Eastern Europe always had a kind of mystique for me.
Totally.
So my mind gravitated towards that region of the world. And I started reading widely a number of histories in the region, and Romania just really caught my interest. It was kind of a serendipity, and then, you know, things worked out. And I couldn't be happier. Bucharest is it's a wonderful city to do research in. It's very safe and, I think, you know, endlessly interesting to think about.
Yeah, totally. When I was reading your book, I was just, like, so fascinated by everything in Eastern Europe, because it just seems so different than in America. But at the same time, like, we have such similar problems. So I thought that was really interesting that you chose that region of focus. And then also your book, of course, as the title suggests, deals a lot with homelessness and boredom and shows how they're so intricately intertwined. So could you maybe elaborate on this for our viewers?
Yeah, absolutely. I never set out to write a book on boredom. Boredom was a kind of problematic that emerged from the fieldwork. So when I was doing sort of preliminary interviews and site visits and trying to figure out how the study was going to take shape exactly, I found myself chatting a lot with beneficiaries of homeless shelters and of day centers and things like this. And very, kind of common salutations of like, hey, how are you doing, would be met time and time again with the response of like, oh, I'm bored, there's nothing to do, these sort of statements about downtime.
Hmm.
And so for me, it became this kind of unavoidable theme that if I really wanted to study inequality and homelessness in Bucharest, I'd really have to wrestle with this question of boredom. And so that was quite new and something that emerged out of the field work. And it also posed these really interesting kind of methodological challenges. I wanted to write this ethnography about life on the streets. And so many of my conversations were structured around this sense of boredom, that nothing happens, that people's lives are kind of stalled out. And there is a kind of struggle to figure out how to tell a story about boredom when people are really, really insistent that there's no activity happening, that life narratives are not moving forward, and that nothing is going on. How does one structure an argument around that when the story seems to be the absence of activity? How do you build a narrative around this? And that was kind of a major sort of challenge of the book, is figuring out, well, how does one tell a story about this?
Yeah, and especially I think your book deals a lot with downward mobility. So how do you feel boredom plays a part in downward mobility?
Yeah, absolutely. One of the key elements of the book is understanding that homelessness is a relatively new phenomenon in post-socialist Romania. So under communism, there is no bureaucratic category called homelessness, and so there were no homeless shelters. There is this kind of alternative way of managing people who fell through the cracks of various state guarantee programs. But the idea of homelessness emerged only after the end of socialism and as Romania is gearing up for accession into the European Union in 2007. It was only in the late 90s and early 2000s that municipal administrators and others came to understand that they had something called a homelessness problem, that people were living on the streets and they needed to, that services needed to be provided and aid assisted or offered. And so what I think is really important here is that the people who eventually ended up in these newly constructed homeless shelters, they're people who in the 1980s completed school systems. They're people who had relatively stable work trajectories, that had family lives, all of which became undone in the 1990s and 2000s as competitive markets emerged and state guarantees dissipated. And so when I was in these homeless shelters and hearing a lot of talk about boredom, what I was hearing was how displacement and downward mobility, the experience of that, came across as the inability to do things that people had always done. Taken for granted activities just a few years before became unthinkable or unaffordable in the present moment. And so people's days were, you know, structured around not the usual kind of activities, but a sense that there was a lot missing in the day-to-day. And so boredom and homelessness became really integral in that way. And then another kind of aspect of answering that question of how is boredom and homelessness integrated? A lot of it has to do with the management of this new homeless population. And so we can think about all of these new shelters, all of these new day centers that are being developed to manage this population. And by and large, they're being developed on the outskirts of town.
Yeah.
And so people who were born and raised in the city are now, you know, given shelter and assistance outside of the city. And so there's also this sense of not even being able to walk through one's old neighborhood or to access public parks that are ostensibly free. And so there's this kind of double movement of the lost ability to do all the things that one was accustomed to doing and then being relocated into these shelters that are just removed from the social life of the city.
Yeah. So could you maybe give some particularly telling examples of these homelessness tendencies constructed by boredom?
Absolutely. So, you know, I'll think in particular about homeless shelter residents. So, you know, the primary homeless shelter where I was doing work, I call it Backwoods in the book, and it's located outside of the city in a former army barracks. And it's incredibly hard to get into the city from there, even if one could afford, you know, cab fare. Taxis would not drive out to the shelter because it's outside the city limits and it's, you know, prohibitive to pick up rides there. Its only connection into the city is a single bus line and it, you know, takes about an hour and a half to get into the city center. And so there's this kind of tremendous effort of time and money to kind of get out of the shelter and get into the city. And so instead, people spend by and large their days inside the shelter. And there isn't formal programming there. There isn't jobs training or educational training or any kind of social activities that are going on. It's just kind of unstructured time. And so, you know, people's days are made up with a lot of pacing and smoking and fidgeting and things like this. What I was really interested in the research is that despite the kind of absence of programming or opportunity, so much of the life of these homeless shelters were structured around this kind of idle fidgeting and not so much rule breaking as one might expect in the United States or in the UK. The literature on homelessness is riddled with kind of an excitement or filled with this excitement of life at the margins. What was so fascinating about this to me is it links back to this idea of downward mobility. And so many of these homeless beneficiaries were very, you know, cognizant about not breaking rules, not breaking laws, about wanting to maintain the last thread of kind of working class respectability. And so we're kind of managing themselves in ways that were profoundly boring and limiting.
Yeah. And so that, I guess that kind of sort of brings me to the point of like how you as an ethnographer in the field observing all of this and being amongst the homeless shelters and the squatter camps, what kind of challenges did you face in the field?
Yeah, you know, Romania, it's this incredibly safe country, and I'm ever so grateful for that. I never had any serious issues, either with like petty theft or otherwise. Mm-hmm. By and large, it was a very welcoming kind of field to do, or site to do field work in. If anything, methodologically, what was challenging is that my presence was often interpreted as a relief from boredom. Mm-hmm. And so somebody who is interested in really documenting, well, what do people do when they're bored and how do they become, for lack of a better word, unbored? Where do they go to seek out opportunity? I found early on in the research that my presence had a way of kind of obscuring that. And so one of the challenges of the study was just to do a tremendous amount of field work. I did about 2.5, a little under 3 years of in-country research for the book. And I made a point to work really long days, to spend long stretches of time at shelters and squatter camps in an effort to kind of make myself less of a novel figure in the field. So yeah, I mean, for me, I think the greatest challenge in terms of field work was, you know, like any ethnographer, becoming a reasonably regular feature of the social world so that I could kind of understand how life unfolds.
Yeah, I also thought it was particularly interesting about how you mentioned that there were more males that were homeless as opposed to women. So could you maybe talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, interestingly, there's very little census or demographic data about the homeless population. A formal definition of homelessness didn't emerge until about 2011 in Romania. So although there were homeless services, there really wasn't a definition as to who that population was or what its contours are, much less, you know, the breakdown of its demographic. But what I noticed time and time again is that what homeless shelter space did exist had a preference for women and children. Mm-hmm. And also when interviewing homeless men, they would tell me, you know, time and time again that their wives or their children were able to move in with other family or friends in a way that they, the men, were not able to. So, you know, I would estimate, just based upon my own observations in the field, that probably, you know, 3 out of 4 homeless persons were male. And a lot of this has to do with, you know, services and social housing programs wanting to help women and children before helping men. And also social networks being more accepting of housing women and children rather than men. I think there's an expectation that, a stronger expectation that men of a certain age go out in the world and make a place for themselves. And homelessness policy by and large reflects that.
Hmm. And so how do you think that relates to homelessness in America?
You know, there's a fascinating study that really focuses on the gender dimensions of homelessness by this excellent scholar, Joanne Passaro, The Unequal Homeless. Mm-hmm. And in her work, you know, she set out to do a study specifically of homeless women in, I believe, New York City. And again, sort of bumped into a homelessness policy and homeless services network that was really geared to moving women and children off the streets and in a way that really disadvantaged men. So I think it's, you know, a parallel phenomenon in the United States as well.
Yeah, definitely. So what do you ultimately hope to inform readers about your book, or what might some of our listeners hope to take away from your book upon finishing it?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the book is really an invitation to think about globalization from the perspective of poverty rather than privilege. I think there's a tendency to associate globalization with, you know, space-time compression and acceleration and the idea that the world is speeding up as a result of, you know, market-driven production and consumption, all of this market-driven activity. And what I found in the book, working with the homeless in Bucharest, people who were displaced by and large by these competitive markets, is that for them, for the homeless, for displaced populations, they're not relating to globalization as something that's exciting or accelerating. Right. Instead, their lives are, you know, by and large, disorganized by competitive markets. Definitely. They're less able to work a job, and they don't have paychecks to be able to go out and get caught up in consumerist activities. And so from the perspective of the homeless, globalization is really about this profound slowing down of time and of boredom. And I think it invites us to think about alienation a little bit differently in the present moment, and to think about how those who have been displaced by competitive markets, what it might mean to get them, you know, caught back up and able to move towards opportunities of various stripes.
Yeah, I think that there's such a big dissonance in globalization where there are so many people on the fringes. So I think it's really important to be reading books such as this, and especially looking at sort of the constructs of what and the multiple dimensions of homelessness. So it really was such a fabulous book to read. And of course, I think some of our listeners would love to know what's next in this research, like sort of like what's the further directions of this research, or do you have any future plans to tell us about?
So I'm really happy that the book is out, and moving forward, I'm continuing on with field work in Bucharest, and I'm pivoting from boredom to basements. I'm doing this study on the literal urban underground in Bucharest. In the last, 15 years, there's been a lot of foreign direct investment and interest in developing and redeveloping central Bucharest. And a lot of it is meant not just building up the city, but excavating down and renovating basements and cellars and building new transit lines and parking garages and all these kind of underground developments. And so I'm interested in the way that that urban life is taking shape beneath the city sidewalks, and to think less about sort of center and periphery dynamics and think more about the kind of upstairs, downstairs, vertical relationships that are also organizing urban life. So I'm really excited to carry on in Romania and to carry on in Bucharest.
Oh, wonderful. That sounds like it will be fascinating to talk to you maybe again about in another interview. So, I wish you the best of luck, and just want to thank you again for being on our show today. And we hope that everyone really enjoys Dr. Bruce O'Neill's book. So thanks again.
Thanks so much. It was great speaking with you.